Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
We bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
started to burn too many things we found. That's the magnificent Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, the Soletopia song. Except for one word, which I wrote. I am, that word would be Soletopia, by the way. I am Harvey.
You used the money.
Sluggo Wasserman. Hello?
But not money, but.
Hello?
Hello? Hello, is that you, Harvey?
Yeah, that's me. Who else is talking there?
Harvey, this is Dan. Nelson and Chase is on with me. I think Phyllis is on, too. Is Phyllis with us?
Okay. Hey, great. We have a terrific, fabulous group. Phyllis Young, are you with us?
Yes.
And Danny Paul Nelson, you're with us?
I'm here, Harvey. Yep.
And
we're not live, are we?
Yes, we are live.
We're live. All right. Excellent.
Live is you and me. And Chase Iron Eyes, you're with us?
Chase is here. Chase, you there?
All right.
Yep, I'm here.
So this is going to be a fabulous show. We're going to talk to the indigenous about the indigenous and cover a wide range of issues, starting with last night's and the night before's debate, because you guys were in Detroit on the scene. And then we will segue into the incredibly important work that you all are doing on the pipelines and preserving our indigenous culture and preserving our earth on which we need to live. After watching these two debates, I'm not sure how optimistic I am. They devoted like 10 minutes, maybe, to the greatest crisis we're facing while they're yelling at each other about their health care plans. I want to tell you something. If I was had 1 minute in the debates, and no matter what the moderator asked me, here is what I'd say. This is my Moscow minute here. I would say that, hey, we have a guy in the White House. His grandfather ran a bordello in California, and he was thus a mafia guy, because that's a mafia business. His father was a developer in New York City, and it is known that he was totally tied into the five families of New York City. You don't build tenements in New York City without mafia involvement. And Donald Trump basically was a mafia guy who inherited all this property. He went bankrupt. He got billions of dollars in debt, and who did he turn to? The Russian mafia. In the 1980s and 90s, Donald Trump laundered money, billions of dollars, billions of rubles in some 1,300 transactions, and is thus owned by the Russian mafia and, of course, their lead mobster, Vladimir Putin. All this stuff about collusion is an enormous understatement. Now, if I said that, if I had a minute to say that in the next Democratic debate, the whole world would stop. I don't know who's going to say it. I might ask Marianne Williamson. Marianne Williamson's an old friend of mine, and she is truly great. It's been really a joy to watch her in these debates, because she's really forcibly introduced a whole other level of discussion into the American political scene. She has a bigger personal following than any of the people on that stage, and it's been really fun. And you, Chase Iron Eyes and Danny Paul Nelson and Phyllis, I got to say, I'm going to get this through. This particular show has two family dimensions for me. Number one, Danny Paul, you are the first guest I've ever had whose parents I've had on the show, Sarah Nelson and Danny Sheehan, the great, great activists. And Phyllis, my mother's name was Phyllis, so I'm thrilled to have you on. Now, you are in Detroit. Phyllis, let's start with you. Why did you come to Detroit, for these these debates, and what did you get out of it, and what did you accomplish there?
Well, I'm Phyllis means green leaf or fern, so I'm original, I guess, in the American sense of my name, my American name. But I'm, I will say, in my introduction, I am Mini Yuhanajiwi na Mini Teshiawi Himachiap. That I'm woman who stands by the water, woman who lives by the water, woman who loves the water. So I came here unexpectedly and at the last moment, because I was advised that the Sunrise Movement for a green deal was here. And I'm inspired by the youth in America. I'm inspired by the young people. And being an elder in my twilight years, I hear some hope. And I see the light at the end of the tunnel. And with the word sunrise, a new movement, inspiration. I came here to witness that.
Fantastic. Now, what is your nationality? What tribe are you involved with?
Me am Dakota. I am Dakota, as in North Dakota and South Dakota. That means friend or ally. And you put a W-O in front of it, Wo Dakota, it means peace. And we are on a continuing life struggle, seeking peace at every level for this country, for Mother Earth, so that we can re-green everyone in their thinking.
So you're saying the word Phyllis means green leaf?
Yes, or fern.
Wow, I never knew that. My mother was Phyllis, and I loved my mother. She was a fantastic human being, but I never heard that meaning of her name, and that's a beauty. And I just had my third daughter gave birth. Got some interference there. My third daughter just gave birth.
Chase, you want to put your phone on mute there, bro?
My third daughter just gave birth to our 10th grandchild. And her name is Haleli Shachar, which means joy of sunrise. So there you go. Very, very appropriate. Danny Paul, Nelson, you have come with this group to Detroit. What's your affiliation? What group did you come with? And what did you do there? And what did you get done?
Thanks, Harvey, for the opportunity. I am the director of the Lakota People's Law Project. We are a consortium of attorneys and organizers with different skills. Some of us come from Standing Rock. Both Chase and Phyllis are from the Standing Rock Nation in South Dakota and North Dakota. I live in California half-time, but I spend a significant amount of my time in the Dakotas working with the two of them. And I should mention that that Chase is currently living at Pine Ridge, which is about 5 hours south of Standing Rock, also in South Dakota. And each of us plays a different role in the various movements that we are a part of. In this particular case, we traveled to Detroit because of an invitation from Sunrise Movement. Hopefully many of your listeners are familiar with the work of Sunrise. They're the ones that brought the young people into Nancy Pelosi's office a number of months ago and put a spotlight on climate change in a new way, bringing into the movement young people, which is an obviously intelligent thing to do, given that the younger generations are the ones that are being sold down the river currently by our failure to act on this existential issue. So we've had a relationship with them for some time, and they invited us to come. They invited Phyllis and Chase specifically. I'm there to provide support. And Phyllis gave a presentation yesterday at one of the actions that they'd organized on Wednesday. We were there to bring a perspective from the Dakotas, from tribal nations, to these activities going on surrounding the Democratic debates. I'll just mention that I think, and I'm non-native myself, but I believe that the power, the moral authority the power of Native communities to speak to the way that we are degrading that which created us because of our inability to control our animal instincts, I suppose is one way to put it. It is very important these days. Standing Rock obviously electrified the world. And, of course, climate change was in the background of that entire movement. The movement was about water. It was about protecting the drinking water of the Standing Rock Nation. But also it was about the need to protect the entire earth and to reevaluate the moral codes that are guiding our political and personal activity across the world right now. So I am doing everything in my power to help propagate the indigenous perspective. It feels incredibly meaningful. And so far, you know, we've managed to garner a response from the media and from the public, and I hope that that trend continues because indigenous voices right now are more important than they've ever been.
Well, I agree entirely, and I'm actually just publishing, and I will send you a copy of my new History of the United States, which is called The People's Spiral of U.S. History from Daganoweda to Solartopia. And Daganoweda, of course, was the founder, the ancient founder of the Iroquois Haudenosaunee Confederacy and the true father of American democracy, such as it is. The Iroquois Confederacy, as far as I'm concerned, was and remains the most advanced democracy in the history of the earth. And it is the wellspring of all American democracy, even though 99% of the people of this country have never heard the name Daganoweda, which is a failing of the educational system. As far as I'm concerned, I've written this book to be a textbook, among other things, for young people to study American history. And I think it's probably the first, in all these years, the first American history book aimed for students to actually mention Daganoweda. Daganoweda pulled together the five tribes of the Iroquois back in it's either the 1540s. Or 1140s, and they formed a very, very advanced, sophisticated governmental structure. I do want to mention, I don't want to go on and on, but you mentioned Nancy Pelosi, and she now has, as the Speaker of the House, and she has now famously said that she didn't really have to pay attention to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or her other cohorts there because they only represented four votes. And I want to make it clear as a historian that, in fact, they represent 86 million votes. It's not that they're women, or not just that they're women of color and Muslim, or some of them, but the fact is that they are millennials. And the millennials, the people born between the early 1980s and early 2000s, represent the biggest demographic cohort in the history of the United States, bigger than the baby boom, which was 76 million. And if the Democrats, if the Democratic Party does not excite the millennials and get them out for this coming election, Donald Trump is going to win, and that will be the end of the human race, as far as I can tell. So I'm glad you met with her. I don't know when you were born, Danny Paul. Are you a millennial?
Did you ask when I was born, Harvey? Yeah,
when were you born?
I was born in 1978. Chase was as well.
Oh, so you
both
guys
40 years old.
You're just a little shy of being millennials, but that's okay. I am 8 hours shy of being a baby boomer. I was born the last day of 1945. And technically, the baby boom begins, you know, it's not really precise with the millennials. The baby boom has a very precise set of boundaries. It's January 1st, 1946 to December 31st, 1964. I was born December 31st, 1945, so I missed it by 8 hours. But anyway, it's tremendous. I've been working with some people from the Sunrise in L.A., and it's extremely important that we get them in. We're getting a little background noise on the phone. Chase Ironize, let me turn to you. We're going to go around in circles here. Tell us about yourself, Chase. I think you've been on my show once with Danny Paul's father, but give us who you are and why you came to Detroit.
Hello? Can you all hear me?
Yes, Chase? Is this you?
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
Chase.
So, Chase, tell us who you are, because if I do it, I'll get it wrong. and why you came to Detroit.
Okay. My name is Chase Iron Eyes. I'm an attorney with Lakota People's Law Project. I'm a public relations liaison for the president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe. I grew up on Standing Rock, and I'm about to get off probation for the No Dapple debacle, ongoing debacle, ongoing international trespass in an act of aggression against the rightful landholders. But I'm not in Detroit. I very much wanted to go, but I've got duties here in Pine Ridge, on the Pine Ridge Reservation, relating to my role as kind of a presidential aide. I'm always extremely busy, so my schedule didn't permit me to go there just now. But we are, the world is different since Standing Rock. Once you wake up, you know, just like if you come from an oppressed demographic, once you kind of come out of oppression a little bit, there's no going back. And once the same is true, once you wake up, once your spirit becomes awake, you can never become unawake again. And it's like that with the climate crisis. You call it an existential crisis. It's a climate crisis. It's facing us down right now. And we have to be active on all fronts in order to make sure that our children who have a birthright, mind us, a birthright, a treaty right, a natural right, a constitutional right, every kind of right conceivable to clean water and healthy ecosystems, and a government that isn't sold out to any number of private lobbies or enterprises or industries. I see fire in the young people's eyes, and, you know, we need to enable that, empower that, guide it and direct it and so forth, so we can achieve the kind of political change that's necessary right now.
So DAPL, Dakota Pipeline Fight, Phyllis, you mentioned it, Phyllis Young. Tell us what the Dakota Pipeline Fight is all about, and thank you for that, Chase, and we'll be doing the round robin, and we'll come back to you. So, Phyllis, tell us about the Dakota Pipeline Fight, if you would, and what it means.
The DAPL, the No DAPL Pipeline, is the fourth pipeline that we've been fighting for over 10 years, or even from 1981. The first right-of-way that was made and went under the river was a gas line called Northern Border in 1981. So they have the original right-of-way, but no one has followed that. The Keystone pipeline went through. They went above Bismarck and down. They didn't follow that original right-of-way. The third one was Keystone XL, proposed to use the right-of-way with an oil pipeline, and it was denied by President Obama, and so the DAPL, the No DAPL, I refuse to call them by my name, my nationality, which is Dakota. So
okay.
They are DAPL to me. And so when they are the fourth one, remember now the third one was denied, and they are now coming up back. DAPL was the fourth one, and they used every tactic that they could. And so living on the largest storage of water in America, from Bismarck, North Dakota to Pierce, South Dakota, there are two council fires, and that is Standing Rock and Cheyenne River. And so that first oil pipeline was authorized by Trump on January 24th of 2017. So they moved aggressively to build that. It's still in federal court addressing the hunting and fishing rights under the environmental tag. So we're still addressing that. We, Standing Rock, we have an original claim for $7 million a year for big game, small game, and fur bearing, which is the hunting and the fishing. So it's $7 million a year times 58 years. That's a massive claim, and we filed that in court. So we've done 10 lawsuits, previous two No Dapple, but No Dapple is now pressing for an expansion. And on what? What, you know, there are five former Army Corps who led Dapple, who accessed the information data of our land base, of everything in the land status, whether it was federal, tribal, public, whatever they changed it to over the years. It's treated territory, Aboriginal. And so in court claiming that it is property of the private sector, and they didn't have to, it's all redacted in the federal court docket. And so, which is BS, because those are all government employees, former Army Corps personnel, officers who access all of that data and made it into the private property. It's real crazy. We've never really had our day in court because the federal court system has built the systems over the years. The public service commissions in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota have all disapproved of pipelines previously, and they have all been overruled by federal district courts to promote the pipeline. So it's really the federal courts who have built the pipelines. And the DAPL is a violation at the highest order. And for Trump to have been voted in has created a devastation in Indian treaty territory, the desecration of our graves, the 26 graves that DAPL went through. It's enormous what the election of that president had done, because the treaty is with them, and he is guilty of misconduct. He is guilty of treason, as are the Army Corps who have permitted it. So we're going there, and we're at renewal on the balance side of it. The proactive is that we are partners with MIT, and we're looking at the military arm of technology. We're accessing all of the sustainable energies that we can use, the cleanup, we got to go into the Marshall Plan of reconstruction and rebuilding our nation like they did to Germany and Japan. So you can spend billions on another country. We don't want the appropriations of this country. We don't want the taxpayers' money for payment on our land. We just want the revenue derived from our own properties, which are the water, the waters and the dams, and they built all of that on our collateral. So DAPL has created devastation in our territory. Looking at the pinhole breakdown of pipes and the down pressure that comes down from water, from oil, it is going to break those pipes. And now we're at a new benchmark for them. They want an expansion. An expansion on what? Because we have never been allowed to have an EIS. How do you have an expansion of a non-existent process? Expansion of what? Isn't that a continuation of something that was a process there for you to see? It's absolute denial of due process and equal protection guaranteed by the Constitution. We could go on and on and on, but they have created genocide because they took our water and they dammed it, and they use it for the national security, and they declare the national security of that pipeline. And so, and saying we are domestic terrorists, you know, I dare to differ with that, because you give our medals back that you gave to the military for Wounded Knee. Who were the domestic terrorists in this country? So I appreciate the veterans who came, because that they were upholding their domestic duty. So we'll honor them next year in a reunion on the fourth year of the 3,000 veterans who came to defend our territory. So there's been a major, major movement, but it symbolizes people everywhere who are in struggle to maintain not only their backyards from the baby boomers, but the front yards of everyone, every American here, their children and their grandchildren. So we represent, O Dakota means peace, and we represent a new mindset. We come from treaties of peace. The government wanted peace, we'll give you peace. We have a collective memory of peace. America does not. So we are going to demand our way of life, which is the natural law. We are obligated by natural law to share with the entire human race, and that's our objective. And it means to restart and regroup and renew Mother Earth. Very traditional objective that we have never exercised, because we have been silenced by government policy to prohibit our way of life, our language, and our religious worship from 1910 to 1978. We marched and protested so we could have that right. So understanding who we are now and exercising that, we are in the adolescence and time period. We're part of the baby boomers who helped build this country, who fought for our freedoms. My grandfather was a code talker in the First World War. My uncle was a hero at Normandy, Sicily, and of the highest order for humanity. So when you're spoiled good by policies and democracies and principles of the highest order for humanity, we're spoiled. And we want only the best. And we want those democratic principles. We believe in the democracy from the... Oh, I'm having a senior moment on public radio, so I'll just stop here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Phyllis. It's wonderful. And yeah, just for the record, you're not as senior as I am, and I've had plenty of moments. So, Danny Paul, Nelson, you're an attorney. Can you give us the specifics of what this fight is about, what this pipeline is allegedly for, and how it looks for stopping it, what you expect to see in the upcoming movements against it, and then we'll get to Chase.
Just to correct the record, I'm actually not an attorney. I am a nonprofit executive and an organizer. My father, Dan Sheehan, is our chief counsel, and Chase is also an attorney with the Lakota People's Law Project. But, you know, what I'd like to offer in terms of upcoming strategy for stopping these pipelines is a couple of things. One is that, as Phyllis referenced, there is an effort ongoing right now by Energy Transfer Partners, which is the company that created the Dakota Access Pipeline, to double the capacity, double the amount of oil flowing through that pipeline. It's not being paid attention to at the national level. It needs to be. And we'll actually be launching a campaign today. And any of your listeners who want to participate in that campaign can go to lakotalaw.org, and they'll be able to find the assets necessary to send messages to the Public Service Commission in North Dakota to demand a public hearing. To double the amount of oil flowing through that pipeline is a major threat to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, currently the spill detection technology that they have in place requires 1% of the oil flowing through the pipeline to be in the water before they even know it. And so that would be just under 5,000 barrels of oil currently, because there are 500,000 barrels of oil flowing through that pipeline daily. So it's not until that amount of oil is flowing in the water that anybody would detect it. To double the amount that's going through the pipeline would increase that threshold to just under 10,000 barrels. So there are a lot of obvious dangers involved with doubling the capacity of a pipeline. The fact that they want to push this through without a public hearing, without any additional permitting, is completely absurd. And so we need thousands of people to write in to the Public Service Commission. So I want to just highlight that feature of things. You know, there's more to be said about the Keystone XL pipeline, but I think I'll defer to Chase and to Phyllis to make comments about that. The Keystone pipeline has been resurrected. We call it the zombie pipeline.
Sometimes we hit the big.
Chase, you there?
Yeah. Did you call for me to weigh in on some, or
yeah,
did I miss that?
No.
Why don't you,
Danny? All right, go ahead.
I'll just finish up real quickly, Chase. I'll just say the basic things about Keystone is that it's a pipeline that was shut down by Obama in 2015 because of climate. It's been resurrected by Trump in the same way that he resurrected the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we are very definitely involved right now across Lakota country in organizing against Keystone. Harvey, I recommend asking Chase about a recent development regarding Kristi Noem, the governor in South Dakota. She's been kicked off the reservation temporarily because of some of her policies. Chase can give you the details about that. But the important thing to highlight is that we are actively engaged against the Keystone XL pipeline, organizing with groups like Sunrise Movement, organizing with tribes throughout the region. There are 9 different tribes, and that's going to be something to keep your eyes on, because they're going to break ground on that pipeline in January, and we have to stop it to give ourselves enough time to get a new president in place to be able to prevent Keystone from being put in. That's the strategic objective that we have at this time.
Okay, Chase, Chase Aronides, can you tell us this pipeline is meant to carry tar sands from Canada down to Texas. Is that right? I mean, it's utterly insane. Is that the basic mission of this pipeline project?
Yeah, this is it's an old pipeline. I mean, it's an old effort. This same company, TransCanada, now known as TC Energy, owns infrastructure already in Sioux Nation Treaty Territory, you know, in what is now eastern South Dakota. And they're also trying to, what they do is they instigate these trespasses, and they are in violation of treaty law or international law. But the problem is that we have courts that are designed by those who are kind of holding our homelands in a state of illegal annexation. I'm an attorney. I've studied their sets of laws and so forth that descend from these other doctrinal traditions that are very, just, they need to be updated. I'm talking about the doctrine of discovery, the papal bulls, all the thought that went into creating that body of law which protects property and capital right now, and doesn't protect people or Mother Earth. So, you know, as individuals, as tribal nations, as NGOs, non-governmental organizations, as any and everybody who's willing to defend not only our rights, but to defend the sacred. That's what's happening when we defend against big financial extractive industrial, the big financial extractive industrial complex. You could add a couple more: private prison, trafficking in indigenous children who have a right to cross this colonially imposed border down there in what is now U.S. and Mexico recognized as that. You've got people who are willing to defend these rights and the sacred, including, the water, our children's right to clean water, and those at Mauna Kea as well. We're building solidarity with everybody around the world, celebrities, governmental personalities, whoever in other countries, whatever. The world's a different place now. And like I said before, since Standing Rock, we cannot go back. So this election right now, 2020, is kind of going to be the focal point of a lot of things. We're going to find out right now if the Democratic Party is viable, if they can get it together. If not, they're going to lose a whole bunch of, whole swath of people. But we need to be having a more direct impact in the kind of world democracy that we have to live with here.
Well, the pipeline is patently insane. And Phyllis, can you talk a bit? I understand there are projects underfoot or underway to make the reservations and Indian country totally renewable with wind and solar in particular. And I had a very good friend who passed away not long ago, Bob Goff, wonderful guy, who was working to solarize the reservations out there. Are you involved with that, Phyllis?
Yes, I am. I got the disobedience award from MIT, and I didn't know what it was, but I was so happy to have rightfully received an award for my life in disobeying and being a malcontent all my life. But it really took on a lot of meaning because I found out who they were, and once I found out they were the military arm of technology, I was challenged by that award because, first of all, I was awestruck because it was a little globe that was made by a 3D printer, and I was actually holding something that I felt was magic with this new technology. And so, having received that and having received a fellowship to MIT and going there and learning all of the technologies, Standing Rock began a wind project back in 1986. So we have established, the tribe has established the migratory bird patterns that are there and have limited the existence of towers for phones, so you get frustrated. We're in a different time and space on the res, and so the technology is very limited. But we do have a wind tower at the college. We've had geothermal at the old college for like 40 years, but still have an electrical attachment. And so overall, two of our elementary schools are green certificates. They are geothermal, and we're looking at solar. We now, I think on the 27th, the Cannonball community embarked and endorsed and celebrated the installation of the largest solar farm in North Dakota. So if you...
Fantastic.
We're looking at an establishment of natural law and connection with our own thunder beings, we call them, the Wapiya Oyate. That's the sun, the wind, the water, the rain, thunder, hail. Those are all the natural elements that you know as Mother Nature. And so we're making agreements that have a spiritual connection, and it's all based on our natural order of things. So it's more conducive to our belief system and our way of life. And so we're incorporating the cultural thought into technology. It's an exciting time because we, as Indigenous people, are the ultra-conservative green protectors of Mother Earth, and we take our responsibility very seriously. So in going into these high-tech developments, we're real excited about creating the renewable portfolio standards, which is the code for regulating these energy systems. North Dakota doesn't have one. South Dakota doesn't have one. So it's incumbent upon us to create that system for ourselves and promote it in Indigenous communities and across the country. So we're on a massive green campaign to green the res. So we're starting with assessments of our 8 community buildings, our tribal building, the administration, and our casino. So we pay, we're indebted monthly for payment to the electrical cooperatives, and not conducive to our housing, not conducive to the weather. So we have to create those for ourselves. So we're doing incredible development for the 4 systems of solar, wind, geothermal, and hydropower. Hydropower is the big one because we, I don't know how to say this without, in our belief system, we cannot own the water. But the treaty, we own the water in American terms. It's our last asset in terms of property. So when they're going into the subjacent lands of our water right, that's a terrible violation. So looking at the development, being very proactive, is finding the balance that we desperately need to save Mother Earth. At the camps, we reach a new threshold. It's not about just us. It's about humanity and saving Mother Earth. She shifted. She's at, her access is tilted. And we have an obligation to our grandchildren all together. So we're trying to create a new methodology for green that we will promote, and we will utilize the natural laws. And we will never have to fear being instilled as part of every component and segment in societies or in groups, because we have very simple life systems and looking for balance. And our rules, our belief systems, we have 7 sacred rites and 7 sacred ceremonies, and 7 tenets of a belief system. It doesn't say no discrimination allowed. It says treat everyone alike. And so I like our way of life. We've revived them. We've saved them by the underground, who was prohibited for 60 years in this country. We now can encourage our children to have an idea. Rome was built on an idea. So take those ideas into academia and create the architecture, create the methodologies that we need for green. And we're doing it. We're going to move forward aggressively. We want Americans, young Americans, to be the majority to help support getting a Green New Deal in this country. For wherever, whatever stage you're at, before you had the name Green New Deal, whether you promoted all of our natural laws before this, but let's give it a name that we can all support. And so we're behind the Green New Deal by creating this new technology, a new partnership with our spiritual values, our belief systems, connected with technology. It's an exciting time. So I'm excited. In my twilight years, I'm a baby boomer, and I'm depending on all of the beautiful Americans to make it a good life for all of us. So
beautiful.
Thank you for being on here.
Well, thank you, Phyllis. Wonderful, wonderfully stated. Danny Paul Nelson, you mentioned at the top of the show that you've been working with the Sunrise Movement. What kind of interface have you been having between the tribes and the Sunrise Movement?
So, Harvey, I would say that we've got a relatively new relationship with Sunrise that is more potentiated than anything that I can talk about in the way of accomplishments so far. Mainly, we've been talking to them about action going forward on Keystone. So, you know, Sunrise, it's true of other environmental groups throughout the country as well. They all know about the work of Chase and Phyllis. Sunrise followed very carefully the legal defense that we did of Chase Ironize when he was arrested at Standing Rock at Last Child Camp. Chase was one of the most prominent water protectors arrested during that stand, and it took us a year to defend him. He was charged with felony trespass and felony incitement of riot simply for putting out some verbiage on Facebook designed to bring people into the movement. If you can believe it, they treated that as an incitement of riot, which is really not far off from what South Dakota now has done in the way of legislation, passing two laws that basically will hold criminally liable any organizations like ours that propagate First Amendment activity that they deem as leading in some way, shape, or form to a riot at some point in time. So just to give you an example of how that could play out, we could organize a protest. They could send in a saboteur who lights a fire or who does something else that qualifies as rioting, and then we are held liable for that and fined large sums of money. This kind of unconstitutional activity has been going on. Chase was caught up in the middle of that, faced a year of litigation. We were able to get his charges dropped ultimately, so that was victorious. But to circle back to your question, you know, environmental groups and progressives throughout the country followed that trial. And so Sunrise, you know, at some point we began communicating with them about ways that we might be able to collaborate. They're very interested in what's going on in Lakota country. I won't speak on their behalf, but we are inspired by their method, which is to invoke the energy of the youth. You know, in some sense, there's similarity there to the way that indigenous people have a uniquely morally authoritative perspective on what's going on with the environment. You know, they've faced genocide from the beginning. They've been emphasizing the importance of respecting the earth, and now we've ignored them, and we find ourselves in a position where we could be destroying ourselves over the next 100 years. And so now we have a return to the original voices that we should have listened to from the beginning. And I just want to tap that by saying, you know, it's not about development versus respect. There's a way to advance and to create civilization without engaging in genocidal behavior. This is not, you know, it's not an either or. And this actually brings us to the democratic debates that are going on right now. There's a major discussion throughout the country right now over, you know, how wealth should be distributed, how we should be treating one another. You know, we don't have to choose between, creating wealth and treating one another well. There's a way for us to work together and to engage in trusting cooperative activity that still leads to us covering our basic needs, providing for ourselves in different ways. We can have a healthcare system that doesn't, you know, involve suspicion of one another and a refusal to lend a hand. That's the basic ethos that undergirds our history and what has entailed, you know, the institution of slavery and genocide against Native people, a refusal to see ourselves in other people. And so that's the moral advancement that needs to occur right now. We need to embrace the possibility of trust and the possibility of cooperation, which then leads to greater equality. Now, Bernie mentioned last night that the most affluent three people in our country have as much wealth as the bottom 90%. That is an absolutely insane situation that you know, predictably leads to all kinds of social pathologies. And the treatment of Native people is one example of a social pathology that we are fighting back against. But looking to those very communities who have been oppressed for wisdom and insight is part of what animates my professional life. So, you know, and Sunrise, of course, is part of that. So we're very honored to be talking to them, and we'll see where that relationship goes over the next 12 months.
Good for you. We're down to the last 10 minutes. I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of the organizations, and then we're going to talk to Chase here for a sec. Danny, Paul, tell us what people should write and look to support No Dapple and other movements that we're focusing on here.
Thanks, Harvey. So Chase, Phyllis, and I, we all work for the Lakota People's Law Project, which is a law firm, and we have a website that you can go to. It's called lakotalaw.org, and you can connect with us there. You know, take one of our actions, sign a petition, join us, and we'll stay in communication with you.
Okay, and Law Project. I'm writing that out. And what is your snail mail address in case people want to send
it? You can send an email to info@lakotalaw.org, LAKOTALAW. Phyllis.org.
Uh-huh. Okay, and I want to send you a Kaiser copy of my book. Which I'll send you a physical copy.
And congratulations.
So what is the address on that?
The mailing address is 210-210 High Street, uh-huh. H-I-G-H Street. You can send that to Santa Cruz, California, 95060. We've got an office there. We also have spaces in the Dakotas, but probably most efficient to send it there.
95060?
95060, yeah.
Does that work for your parents as well?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so now, Chase Iron Eyes, I just want to run this bio because you're an attorney. In my new book, I presume basically that at the bottom of all the American legal system, at the basic foundation, is in fact the Kainera Kavova, the sacred law of peace. And that what we have in this country really, if you think about it, is an indigenous originalism. All the, because, you know, you got these guys on the Supreme Court and they talk about constitutional originalism and they put their heads, they claim to put their heads in the heads of the founders of the Constitution, and somehow it always comes up in favor of the corporation. But, you know, the indigenous original laws of this continent have never legitimately been overturned. And as an attorney, first I want to congratulate you on getting the charges dropped. I know that Danny Sheehan worked a lot on that, and I talked to him actually on the show about that. So thank you for getting out of there. But what do you see as the basis of real American law in this country that allows an environmental movement to proceed? Chase, are you still with us? Ah, we must have lost Chase somewhere. Danny
Chase,
Paul,
Chase, you there?
No, I think he disappeared.
Hey, yeah, this is Chase, but sorry, I can barely hear it. I'm very, very busy, but...
okay.
Was I asked a question or something?
Yeah, real quick.
Harvey,
real
can you repeat it?
Sure. Well, I'll be more brief. Chase, in a book I've just written, I put forward the idea that the real legal code in America, the spiritual code, and it should be the legal code, is an indigenous originalism. That all law in America, especially when we're dealing with the environment, should come from the basic laws of the original tribes and nations, like the Haudenosaunee and so on. Have you ever raised that issue in court with these feds that keep trying to put you in jail?
Yes, we do. We raise treaty law, also just our original and inherent authorities that we have to be here and to determine our destiny as nations. But the colonially imposed court system of, I would say, pretty much Western civilization, including what is now their colonies, the Christian European colonies. They've all got these same legal systems that are propped up by capital and designed to protect capital and property. It's very hard. We're never going to change that from within. So we've got to learn how to fight at the margins, I think, and really just to be, as tribal nations, to be self-sufficient and provide for ourselves and be ready, because this country has proven itself to be negligent when it comes to ensuring that institutions that are designed to protect the will of the people or the prosperity of the people do not fall to big money interests. And we've failed that horribly. And tribal nations are now in a place, and I'm in a place, where we can start building bridges to prevent that from being the state of reality, really. And so I'd say that's a good thought. I like that. I've been supporting that for a long time. But these guys are ready to, they're willing to die just so long as that they got first class seats on the Titanic as we, the oppressed classes, have. We're drowning already. And, you know, they know about the climate crisis, but they continue to deny it. And we're going to reach continually and increasingly more desperate states. You see it happening. There's little blips of it. In New York, 40 people went and robbed an entire CVS there's little acts of kind of public challenges of the state of law and order, and they know it's not right. They've built this for a very long time, but it's unraveling.
Well, fantastic. Hey, you guys were terrific. I'm really honored to have had you on. I will send you a URL for the show, and you can spread it far and wide. Thank you so much for being on my show, and keep up your great work.
You're welcome, Harvey. It's a privilege. Thanks so much
Take care.
For the time.
No, no.
Soul Utopia, don't you know?